Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius Tactheratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a lockdown.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. I hope you're all feeling good as we steam into this holiday season. Shields up, man. It's time to take care of your body. That's what I'm saying. Get yourself physically prepared for what is coming, especially those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, where we start to get into the darker days, the shorter days, the dark winter, as Joe Biden says. You might want to have your shields operating at maximum capacity. Maybe take a look at c60purplepower.com and see if they've got anything for you over there. It's going to help you with your cellular health. It's C60 is a naturally occurring molecule. It's comprised of 60 carbon atoms. They won the Nobel Prize for the discovery of it. It is a free radical sponge. It roams your body looking for free radicals to neutralize, and then it resets itself and does it again and again. It's kind of amazing. It's really, frankly, I'm a bit surprised that not everybody knows about this, but that's the benefit of listening to weird shows like this, is that you're going to hear about a bunch of crazy crap that nobody else has ever heard of. So if you are interested in getting yourself physically prepared, or you're just curious as to what C60 actually is, then go to c60purplepower.com and read up about it. See if you think it might be a good fit. There might be somebody in your life that is needing this, and you want to get it for a Christmas present or a holiday present. Sorry, I'm not allowed to say Christmas anymore, I guess. You can consider C60 Purple Power as an option for that. So do what you can. Take a look. Read up on it. On your way out, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money. These statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, prevent, or mitigate any disease. C60PurplePower.com. And, well, we've got a new one. We've got a new sponsor. Thank God we've got a CBD sponsor now. And not just any CBD sponsor, but we've got a great one. Welcome to the family, True Hemp Science. I'm telling you right now, this is something you want to check out. I've been taking CBD for a while. I have had, I've had mixed results with it. At first, I felt like it was working. Lately, I haven't felt that many benefits to it. So when I spoke with Chris over at True Hemp Science, you can get, by the way, truehempscience.com, promo code MACRO on your way out the door if you're interested. But speaking with Chris there, he says, well, I'll send you a box of items and you try them out and you see what you think. Now, I didn't tell Chris this, but in my mind, there's only one thing that I needed to test out. I need to see if this CBD, whatever he sends me, is going to work on my left shoulder. My left shoulder is a disaster. Has been for a while. It's the reason why I've been taking CBD. Like I said, it's had limited results. So he sent me this big box of stuff. I got it right when I was super busy. I opened it up, but I didn't like open each individual bottle, and they kind of sat there for a while. I reconnected with Chris about 10 days later, and he said, "Hey, how's it going? Have you tried the products?" I said, "Well, I've got them, but I haven't, you know," I said, "I've got them, but I kind of left it at that." He says, "Well, how are you doing?" I said, "Well, I've got a shoulder injury that I want to get, you know, fixed, basically. Like, as long as it fixes my shoulder, I'm good." He says, "Well, I sent it to you 10 days ago. Like, is your shoulder fixed yet?" And I was like, I haven't actually started taking it yet. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, it's been 10 days. Like, what's it going to do in 10 days? You know what I mean? And he was like, he said to me, "Oh yeah, I sent it 10 days ago. Your shoulder should be fine by now." And I was like, "Well, I'll start taking it." So from that moment on, I started doing it. I got my procrastination out of the way, started taking it. I'll be damned. About 10 days later, my shoulder is pain-free. I don't know how it works. I don't know why it works. I just know that it is working. I just know that that was the one thing that I needed to see in order for me to get convinced about it. You know, I mean, I don't know what all CBD can do. I know it can do a lot for you, but I don't need it to do everything for me. I'm in pretty good shape. I just need it to make my shoulder feel like it's not going to fall off every time I'm in the gym. And sure enough, it worked. So I'm in. He's got me. I'm in. I'm officially in. Now, I think I'll put this to you the same way I put everything else. There's never going to be a hard sell. I don't even know if you need to hard sell this stuff, but it's just this. Go to truehempscience.com/macro. They've created a little landing page for us and also a promo. If you're interested in trying this out, spend $65 or more and you will receive a 297 milligram bottle of number 81 distillate that they've got there. They'll just send you this. He also, I'm not supposed to say it, but he'll throw in stickers and things like that. They like to throw in some goodies for you. So they're going to give you this anyway. Free shipping on anything over $150 already. But if you're interested, man, I'll keep you posted. Obviously, if you're listening to this show, this is going to be a sponsor that's going to stick around for a while. If for some reason my left arm falls off during the macroaggressions run, then maybe you can disavow my relationship. But I have a pretty good feeling that this is working just fine, that it's going to continue to work. So look, go take a look at their products. They've got a complete line of CBD products. They've got full spectrum CBD oils and tinctures. They've got CBD skincare lotion, sport rubs, gummies, and even gluten-free chocolate. So they've got a little bit of everything. If there's somebody in your life, you're getting close to the holidays, you think you might want to get them some, I don't know, stocking stuffers or some actual medicine that's going to make them feel better, boy, check it out. It's working for me. TrueHempScience.com/macro. On your way out at the checkout page, use the promo code MACRO as well. We certainly do appreciate it. And welcome to the family, True Hemp Science. Excited to have you guys on board. I'm just collecting cool sponsors that have products that help you physically, help you mentally, help you financially. Tony, we've got Tony Arterburn over at Wise Wolf Gold. That's www.macroaggressions.gold. Woo. That's it. I mean, listen, all these things, to me, all these things are like Christmas presents. Like, I'd love silver. Silver, some CBD, some C60. Yeah, I'll take it all. But that's not what we're talking about here today. No, no, no. But it is a nice transition. We'll transition from CBD to ESG. Plus WEF or WTF, more like it. Do you know what ESG is? Have you heard about ESG? No, you haven't? Oh, get ready. Get ready. It's the new scam these maniacs are running on us. you're going to be disappointed. I'm sure, because it's, well, I'll just tell you, it stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance. And I mentioned this in the last monologue episode when we were talking about the pivot to climate change, you know, where you go from COVID and then you start talking about climate change, and they try to tie these things together, which is fascinating to me, considering there should be no overlap, but that's not going to stop them. So this is all the rage now. ESG, you're going to start seeing it everywhere. You're going to see signs, you're going to see stickers, you might even see them on the front of retail stores that say something like ESG certified, or this product is ESG certified, or this supplier is, and you'll be like, what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, what it means is that these companies have gotten on board with this World Economic Forum agenda. And it is a World Economic Forum agenda. They are deeply involved in this. This is, in the last episode, we talked about the credit card that the World Economic Forum was putting forth with an ESG component to it, where it would, you know, when you're buying things, it would recognize the products that you buy, recognize if it had an ESG score. And early on, most things won't have an ESG score, but they're rolling this out now with the understanding that this credit card will be more relevant in the future when all of these things have ESG scores. But the premise behind it is that it's going to read your purchases and it's going to keep track of them in terms of the brands and products that you're interacting with and how bad these things are, how good or bad these things are for the environment. Right, they're going to have they're basically going to get a score for where they fall on this spectrum. Are they doing everything that is necessary to help out on the environmental side? Are they doing what's necessary for the social side? And are they also on the right side when it comes to governance? Now, not every product is going to be relevant. Not every product is going to be a natural fit here. But it might not be so much the products that are a natural fit, or it might not be the products that are getting the individual scores early on, but it might just be the company itself getting this score. So like if we were ranking companies, not the World Economic Forum, but if we were ranking companies on a scale of, I don't know, 1 to 10, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst, we would obviously be giving Monsanto a 1, right? So anytime you bought Roundup for your yard at Home Depot, the Roundup, which is made by Monsanto Bayer, your credit card would be like, you're buying products made by the devil. You know, that would be the theory behind it. Now, in a series or a situation where everybody is a good actor and everybody is working to actually do the right things, I could understand where something like this could be helpful in terms of measuring the way in which you interact with products or brands that are on the right side or wrong side of humanity. You know, they have these funds that you can invest in on Wall Street. They're like vice funds. And the vice fund is like, it's made up of like Philip Morris tobacco. It's made up of InBev, the owner of Anheuser-Busch, all the beer and alcohol ones. It's, you know, it's got shares of MGM in there for the casinos. It's got off-track betting, you know, whatever it is, these sort of vices, and they pool them all together. And you can buy stocks in this index or portfolio of companies or whatever. You can basically bet that we like our vices. You know, you can bet that we're going to, you know, that the price of alcohol and tobacco and all these things, or the stock price of these companies, is going to increase, right? But those are the sorts of brands and industries that would be ranked very low with an ESG score that's very low. So this is the concept behind it, right? So they break it down additionally, but into ethical and into ethical investments and impact investments as well. But we'll talk about that in a minute. But just let's define the three terms here, all right? So the E and ESG stands for environmental, okay? And what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, of this company that we're talking about right now, how are they in terms of environmental? Let's just use, Exxon. Exxon Mobil as an example. How are they in environmental? Well, they're pretty fucking bad. Okay, so they're going to be at the bottom. How are they with regard to social? Are they any good with social? Well, they are not the best when it comes to diversity hires. They're really looking more for geologists and not purple-haired people with 18th century women's lit degrees. So they're not super good on the social thing. Well, how are they in governance? I mean, tax strategy, board diversity, all of that. It's like, well, they're not pretty good. They're not good on that either. So ExxonMobil is going to be a bad one, right? Of course, in reality, they'll get a waiver and they won't have to participate in this. We all know that. But the theory behind it is that you're going to measure a company based on these three criteria. So let's start with environmental. Environmental, the components that they talk about are waste and pollution, resource depletion, greenhouse gas emission, deforestation, and then the catch-all bullshit term, climate change. How are they on climate change? Well, we haven't seen any polar bears clinging to shrinking icebergs around the Monsanto headquarters, but we're looking. We're keeping our eyes open. We know they're around here somewhere. So they want to make sure that you're not out there destroying the environment. Well, when we talk about big, big businesses, there's a pretty good chance that you are. You're out there deforesting things, or you're, you know, as an example, like paper mills and paper companies and things like that. Deforestation, they're going to get dinged on that, right? Because they're deforesting because they're in the paper business. But let's say it was a paper company that exclusively used hemp and turned that into paper. I mean, since we're on the true hemp science sort of theme, we might as well stick with hemp, right? Hemp is great for that. It's renewable, grows like a weed. It is a weed. And you can, doesn't cost a lot. You don't need a whole lot of room. You can harvest it over and over. Let's do that. Or maybe they make their paper with a combination of hemp and bamboo or something. And bamboo grows, is a grass, and it grows extremely fast. And so maybe out of all the paper companies out there, there's this one paper company that is doing things differently. They've got bamboo and they've got hemp and they've incorporated that into their portfolio and they're really doing their part. Well, maybe their score is a little bit higher on this side. So you make a decision, you're out buying paper products, right? And you've got six choices. You're at some place where you need a lot of paper, you've got six choices. Maybe to you or the consumer, maybe the ESG score will make a difference. Maybe you go, well, all things equal, and I don't really, it's just paper. I just need paper. I don't need brand name paper. This one's got a higher ESG score. Fine, I'll buy that one. So there's that component to it, right? There's the potential for you to set yourself apart from your competitors because your product is rated higher, not necessarily because of the quality of your product, though it may, that might be part of it, but really it's the philosophy of the company that makes your product is what we're focused on. Okay, so if you stay there in that area, not a bad thing, right? If you can convince companies that there is a benefit to making their widget a different way, a way in which all things being equal, it's better for the environment, there's nothing wrong with erring on that side, right? So we understand why, you know, we understand the concept behind this. This isn't new. Second part of this is social. The S in ESG is social, and that has to do with, now these are more open to interpretation, I guess is the best way to put it. Employee relations and diversity. That's the first one on the list. We're going to measure you. We're going to give you a score based on your company's diversity. Now, I've run a sports media training company, and I've run a real estate brokerage. Both situations where I had people underneath me that I had to interact with, and in all cases, the better they do, the better it makes me look. The worse they do, the worse it makes me look. In the end, what I'm looking for is the person that can get the job done the best. But I would be punished if I did not hire a black transsexual midget who's in a wheelchair. Even if the person that I wanted had tons of experience, was the best candidate for the job, I actually, over the long haul, maybe not on this one particular hire, but if it's a sort of, you know, if I've got this unique characteristic in my hiring practice, which is, you know, I want to hire the best person for the job, and I just keep hiring the best person over and over again, and every time the best person doesn't look like a black transsexual midget in a wheelchair, then I'm going to get dinged for that because I'm not being diverse enough. Never mind the fact that that person is unqualified for the job in which I need them. That doesn't matter. My score will go down because I don't fill a diversity hole. Okay. No, just on a personal note, if the black transgendered or transsexual, I forget, midget in the wheelchair was the best fit for my position, I'd hire them. Because in the end, I'm looking for the best fit. I'm looking for the person that doesn't give me headaches. I'm looking for the person that can do the job, that can do it with my oversight, or is capable of doing it without a whole lot of oversight. Somebody that has great ideas, somebody that is self-motivated, somebody that brings something to the table. Frankly, I don't care what they look like. As long as they don't scare away the customer, then I got no problem with it, right? That's how it should be. And that's how I think everybody should be, right? I mean, I know that that's not always the case, and people play favorites, or people don't like that group and they don't hire them. But if you're trying to run the business the right way, and your loyalty is to success for your business, then who you're hiring, what they look like, or whatever, it shouldn't matter. Obviously, it does. But in this scenario, who you hire is going to not just matter, it's going to be part of your score. It's going to be, and that score is going to be used against you by consumers, by your suppliers, by a lot of people. So the score is going to matter, and you're being warned in advance of the criteria of how the scoring system is going to work, right? You can't act surprised later when you're like, I can't believe you're dinging me for diversity. Well, it's literally the first thing on their list. They want diversity, and they're going to manipulate you or coerce you into it, you know, through the scoring thing. So another thing on the list of social components, working conditions. I think that's probably reasonable. Local communities, not quite sure what that means. Health and safety. Gray area, and conflict. Your social score is going to be dictated by how your company deals with conflict. What kind of conflict? What are we talking about here? You mean Black Lives Matter protesting your store? That kind of conflict? Or what are we talking about? Well, that's it. They just leave it open-ended, right? So they can cram a bunch of things in there. So for the social component, you've got employee relations / diversity, working conditions, local communities, health and safety, and conflict. Third thing on the list, the G in ESG stands for governance. That is, corporate tax strategy, executive remuneration, donations and political lobbying, corruption and bribery, and of course, board diversity and structure. So here we are back to the diversity thing again. We're going to force you to have a diverse board of directors, even though it's, you know, your company, your money, you've got stock in it, you've worked your entire life to build this whole thing up. But if you don't put the black transgendered midget in the wheelchair in your board of directors, we're going to ding you again. So, I mean, look, I'm sure there's just a bunch of old white men sitting on the board of directors, a lot of these companies collecting paychecks. Guarantee that's happening. Obviously happening. But I don't know that this is going to work. I don't know that you're going to strong arm Monsanto into complying with this. It's easier for them to just buy one of the politicians that they already lease and just have them just say, hey, just give me an exemption for that. We're not participating in this horse shit. I'm not doing this. Just stop. Just give me the waiver. Who do I have to talk to? Oh, that guy, Chuck Schumer. I have to talk to Chuck Schumer. All right, tell Chuck Schumer I've got the photos from the island and tell him that I'm looking for my exemption. If he's got a problem with it, tell him to call me. I mean, you just know that's how it's going to get done, right? But, you know, and the scores will be so rigged. And, you know, in ExxonMobil, they'll get a perfect score. You know why? Because they donated money to Greenpeace. So once you classify everybody by their ESG score, then there's this new component, which is ESG screened investments. And this is what, this isn't going to appeal to most of us. This is more like big banks or investment funds or structured annuities or so. What anybody that's buying like massive amounts of stocks, 401ks, things like that, they're going to have the opportunity to dig through and make purchases on a new two new classes of investments. They're the same old investments, but they're going to be broken down differently. They're going to have an ESG score now. Everything's going to have an ESG score. So now, based on the ESG score, you can create a new class of assets, and that is either the ethical or the impact, right? So ethical investments are this. This excludes industries such as tobacco, alcohol, and weapons. Okay, so you can say, well, our company wants to invest in, or our, you know, my pension fund wants to invest in, we've got, you know, $4 billion in this pension fund, and we want to put a portion of that towards something. Obviously, we want to make money, but we need to virtue signal to all of our investors and employees that we're such a great company. We need to put this in our brochure. So what we want to do is we want to allocate some of this money that we've got to spend on these investment products, and we want to buy ethical rated investments. Like, think of it as an investment instead of it being stamped AAA, like a mortgage-backed security back in like 2007 where it was stamped AAA. This will just be like a mortgage-backed security that'll be stamped ethical, right? And what ethical means is, this group of this fund that you're buying into, or this group of companies, is we don't deal with tobacco, alcohol, and weapons. Aren't we great? And maybe you go, hey, I like that. That'll work for my people. You know, I can sell it to them and say, listen, I'm getting you into this stuff. This is good. We're not supporting the bad things. We're not going to put our money into supporting the bad things. We're going to do something different. Fine. Again, nothing inherently nefarious about that. It's your money. You can choose to invest it in whatever you want. The second component of this second type is called impact. This is the impact investments. These have direct impact on positive social change. So this is a tricky one. This is a gray area, right? Where you're going to say, well, part of one of the companies in my portfolio of impact investments is Nike, because Nike has given so much money to Black Lives Matter. Look, they've given $100 million to Black Lives Matter. They do have a transsexual black midget in a wheelchair on their board of directors. Aren't they woke? They have given money to Greenpeace. They have donated to the local communities. They sponsored the Boys and Girls Club, and they gave free Nike shoes to all these kids. Aren't they great? They're going to get a score. Now, let's think about this. Is that score going to reflect the fact that their shoes are made by slaves in Asia? Probably not. Probably going to leave that part out. Oh, I see that you've got Nike in your ESG portfolio. Yeah, oh yeah, Nike gives a lot of money to Black Lives Matter. They got a really diverse board. We like them. They make their products in China, which has a pollution problem, which nullifies your greenhouse gas emission, resource depletion, waste pollution, and climate change from the environmental component. The only thing it doesn't address is deforestation. So they failed on that front. What about social? Employee relations and diversity. Okay, fine. They've got that. Working conditions. Great. At Beaverton, at the corporate headquarters in Oregon. Not so great in a Uyghur camp where you're putting buttons on a pair of LeBron James shoes. Working conditions there, awful. Will it reflect that? Will this be an accurate score? Then you look at governance. You go, well, Nike's tax strategy, yeah, they're good. They're good at avoiding tax. They're good at political bribery. I mean, lobbying. They've corruption and bribery. Well, we haven't heard much about them. Board of directors, diversity. Well, they've got the black transsexual midget again. So we're good there. So my question is, are these scores going to be anywhere near accurate? And, will this just turn into a big joke where we're laughing? We're going, oh, okay. This is like NewsGuard. If you go back to an episode I did about a year ago called Guarding the News, talking about NewsGuard, what you'll find is they're the ones in charge of giving the rating system for the news. And yet all of the mainstream media get the green rating, you know, like, oh, this is real great information. Just the top level information, no nefarious fuckery going on with any of this information. Washington Post, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, they all get green ratings. And then InfoWars, you know, gets a red rating, and you can say what you want about that. WikiLeaks gets a red rating, you know, and people are going, huh? So it's great that they're going to be grading these, but are the grades going to be worth a damn? So, but now let's talk about this. Let's think about how ESG scores will be incorporated into what you are allowed to buy. Okay. This is a dangerous slope here, because right now we have been living in a society where if you've got the money, you can buy whatever you want in the store as long as they've got enough of those units for sale. You want to walk in there and buy every case of bottled water and you've got the money, you can do it. Nobody's telling you there's a limit to it. But this score system might. This score system has the ability to do that. And this goes back to that credit card that we were talking about. Now, when you're just paying cash, which is going away, as you know, if you're paying cash for products, then there's no tracking. Nobody's going to know what you're getting. But if you're buying them on a credit card, and if you're buying them at a place that has, say, a loyalty cards program, like like the grocery stores, you swipe your card, which gives you a discount on some of the products. And then they track everything that you're buying. They know exactly what you want. They tailor the coupons to match that and all that good stuff. So we already know that they are watching our purchases. They have been for a while. It hasn't gotten too nefarious. In fact, it's still been in that world of, we're just trying to make sure that we're offering you the things in coupon form that you are more likely to buy. So we're refining our search based on your previous spending history. That's logical. That makes sense. The marketing degree in me is going, this is good. This is good, right? Maybe not though, because it depends on whose hands it's in, who's in charge of all this information. So now you're going to have credit cards that have the ability to limit you on what you're allowed to buy. It may be a situation where you're swiping your card through because you really want to buy, you're having family over, it's 4th of July, right? You're going to have a big cookout. You buy a bunch of hamburgers and hot dogs and some steaks. You've got hot dog buns and all this, all the things that you would want for this picnic party, right? But you see that steak that you want to buy, well, that comes with a score attached to it. And the score is attached to it because, well, it comes from cow, that the meat comes from cows, and cows have cow farts, and cow farts are destroying the environment, and we have to get away from cows, and you really should be eating cockroaches instead. So what we're going to do is we're going to set a very high level, a very high ESG score for anything beef related. Now you want to go to the grocery store, you're getting ready for this big picnic that everyone's coming over later today, and you go and you buy all this stuff, you can't buy it. Your card just won't allow you to buy it. You have exceeded your allotment of meat. You can't have that much meat. What are you, trying to kill the planet, man? What the fuck's the matter with you? I'm trying to buy all that hamburger? What's wrong? So this is behavior modification in the form, under the guise of saving the planet and being environmentally, socially, and governance conscious of this whole thing. Oh, what a crafty little trick they've built into this, huh? So we've talked about social credit systems. Think about that as like the overlying top part of this. And then underneath the social credit systems, all the components that feed into that. ESG scores of the stores in which you shop, ESG scores of the products that you buy, the credit cards that you use to buy those products will keep track of all of that. And it may be that we get to a point where you have an allotment, an allowance of what you are authorized to purchase and consume per month, per week. I don't know. I'm not sure how it'll all eventually work out. But this is the sort of vision that they have for us. They're going to modify your purchasing behavior through the environment, right? So when I've made this claim before that the idea that climate change is never going away in our lifetimes, that concept is never going to go away and die, this is part of the reason why I'm saying that. Because when you have a much bigger plan of global enslavement, behavior modification, they're going to use the threat of destroying the world through increased carbon dioxide levels as the justification to shape behavior. Now, we've watched it with COVID. We recognize that the strategies and tactics used for COVID, be that the trauma-based mind control and psychological operations that they ran everybody through over the first 18 months to get people conditioned and to accept this, those same tactics will be used for the climate. And much like you've got a vaccine that's going to come and save you and a vaccine passport to track who are all the good people that have made the decision to save humanity by getting vaccinated, just think about that same sort of software program that's running in the background here, measuring everything. Think about how that will work with regard to ESG scores. Because it's one thing to say that guy bought a hamburger and that guy bought 5 gallons of gas. But when you put a score on it that can be tracked and is consistent across multiple platforms, then you can really start to track these things. And I'm going to get to this in a second as to standardization of measurements. But let me to get to that in a minute. But we've talked about social credit scores and how they could just like turn your, if we're in a digital world and everybody's got their Nest thermostat set up and you're getting your energy from a place that has control over delivering you your energy, your score gets too high, they just shut your energy off. They just shut your power, your heat off. All those stories Rachel Maddow talked about, like, oh, is Russia going to turn off the gas and freeze you out this winter? Probably not. But you know who might? The people at the World Economic Forum, under the guise of protecting the world, right? Saving the planet. So, this is, of course, frustrating for a lot of people because we know, you just know that the real polluters, the real companies or institutions that are on this ESG score, they would have a high ESG score if having a high score meant it was the worst, then you know they're going to get an exemption. You know that the United States military is not going to have an ESG score. They're just not going to. They're not going to do it. Did you know you do know how much they pollute, right? That they, the woke U.S. military pollutes more than New Zealand, more than just the military, more than New Zealand, more than Hungary, more than Switzerland. You know, I went over this in the last episode. It's embarrassing how much energy we use just for our war machine. But that's, you know, we understand that this is not based in fairness, of course. It's based in an agenda. And the agenda is that you and me and everyone else that we know, we're going to be the ones paying the price for this climate thing, even though we aren't the ones contributing to any sort of climate situation. And they're going to blame us for it anyway. So we might as well understand how it works. Okay, so part of how it works is this. The World Economic Forum is running this operation. No surprise to anybody. They are partnering up with Sustainability Accounting Standards Board. And they are working together to establish a globally accepted system for corporate disclosure that includes key sustainability information as well as traditional financial information. So what they're saying is this. The World Economic Forum is approaching the SASB and they're saying, listen, you guys come work with us. Let's get together and let's see if we can figure out a way to quantify this sustainability under the guise of matching that with financial information to create financial instruments. It's financial instrument meaning investment instruments that have these scores on it so that we can then turn around to big investment players and say, you should really buy all these bonds, or you should really buy all this, or you should buy stock in this company, or you should buy, you know, we're floating new bonds out there, and they're all with these green woke companies, and they all have ESG scores of 12 or higher. Well, I'm just making that up, but you know what I mean. So they'll say, this is the criteria. This is what we've got. And so they're interested in creating investment vehicles that have a green slant to them. Again, nothing inherently bad about that. But here's where it gets tricky. They're also bringing in the International Finance Reporting Standards. This is IFRS, which oversees the International Accounting Standards Board. Now, I recognize that the only thing more boring than talking about accounting is talking about accounting standards boards. But I assure you it's important, so let me just explain why. So this is what they're doing. The IASB, the International Accounting Standards Board, has been in existence for a long, long time. And what they're saying is, okay, world, in order for us to all get on the same page when it comes to accounting for these companies that we're all monitoring, we have decided that we're going to set the standards for accounting. It's going to be this, this, and this, right? And this is how we're going to do it. We're going to all do it this way. We're going to be consistent about it. This is how it works. This is how we'll do it. This is how you need to do it. If you don't do it this way, we're going to tell you that you need to do it this way, because everybody that's investing is going to be expecting it to be done this way. So you've got to do it this way, right? So that's the accounting standards boards. They have standards for their accounting principles, right? And they're used in 140 countries already. But what these maniacs at the World Economic Forum are doing is they're partnering up with these international accounting standards boards to create something called the Sustainability Standards Boards. So what they're saying is, let's take all your accounting rules that you've all agreed on in advance. All you accountant people have agreed on these rules. We've been using them for a long time in 140 countries. We like that. We like that you've got it all figured out. It's all standardized. It works. People know what to expect. We're going to take that and we're going to make a new version of that that has to do with not just international accounting standards, but sustainability standards. Isn't this great? We're going to need you accounting standard board, to help us figure this out. We want to do it just like you've been doing with the accounting standards, only we're going to make this for sustainability standards. Sound? Understand? That makes sense? So this is what they're doing. They want global, they want to improve global consistency, okay, when it comes to this. They want to have a one world standard, right, for this. The goal is a global system for comprehensive corporate disclosure. Okay. So they're setting this up right now. So all of these big, big corporations, countries too, but corporations are about to have to reimagine the way they do business and incorporate sustainability accounting into their all the other stuff that they've already been doing with normal accounting. They're about to have to do things quite literally backwards than the way they used to. They're going to have to get out of the measuring boring numbers, and they're going to have to get into the world of making up fake numbers to assign scores to products and corporations and maybe even industries in general. It's a clusterfuck, and I don't understand how they think it's actually all going to work. But it should come as no surprise to you that this is part of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, otherwise known as Agenda 2030. And Agenda 2030 has in it this new sustainability standards. It's part of it. So if you were unsure what an ESG score was when we started this episode, or maybe you'd heard of it and you were unsure if it's a good thing or a bad thing, because it does sound like it could potentially be okay. Like it could be like the nutrition label that's on your can of beefaroni. but like a nutrition label for products that sort of show how green the product is or how not green the product is, you know, how many, you know, calories are in it, so to speak. So in theory, providing people more information about these items that they're buying or companies that they may be supporting, more information is not necessarily a bad thing. You can use it if you need it to process and make a more informed decision based on more information that you have. But that only works if the information is good. It doesn't work if the information is some bullshit ESG score that they got rewarded with because they're friends with all the guys at the WEF, which is, of course, exactly what's going to happen. I mean, because otherwise, all the airlines would have Fs or whatever the numerical equivalent to a failing grade is, because they would fail on the environmental part right off the bat with as much, you know, CO2 as they put out into the atmosphere, you know, plant, otherwise known as plant food. So this is how you do it. You try and create a unit of measure for sustainability, which is a very malleable thing, right? There's a lot of, it's kind of hard to say how sustainable something is. Maybe you're just the company that assembles it, but all the parts are made with the rare earth minerals or made with redwood trees that shouldn't be torn down, or comes out of the Amazon or something, that, you know, like maybe all the products, all the pieces are made with that, but you're just the company assembling it and you've got a great score. And so it looks like the product is not a big deal at all, but it's secretly like made with coconut palm, and it's, you know, the orangutans are dying because their trees are being deforested, whatever, you know, I mean, I just get the feeling that the scores are going to be totally inaccurate, not anchored in reality at all. And look, since it is tied to the World Economic Forum and the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, you know there's going to be just a whole layer of bullshit in there on a level that you can't even really comprehend. And speaking of that, you've got Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America, who should rightly be in prison for the rest of his life for the things that his company's done, saying that they need $6 trillion a year to make this happen, meaning the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. It was adopted in 2015. They said it's going to take 15 years for us to get this thing going. Brian Moynihan says we need only $6,000 billion a year to make this thing work. Sounds reasonable, right? And he thinks we can do it. So what is it that Brian Moynihan and the rest of the World Economic Forum people want to make happen? Well, they want the 17 sustainable development goals proposed by the United Nations to come into being. That's what they want. That's what success looks like. It success looks like all 17 of these goals being fulfilled. Would you like to know what the 17 goals are? Well, let's start with this one. This is, just keep in mind, and this is the United Nations. So in your head, picture the ghost of David Rockefeller standing in front of a podium announcing with a straight face that this is what they are planning to do. These are their goals. They're going to try really hard to make all of these things happen. Okay, let's get ready for it. Number one. No poverty. All right. Automatic disqualification. Show's over. Thank you. Everybody go home. Thanks for coming out. If number one on your list for the United Nations for your 17 goals is no poverty, it's over. Okay. It's just, that's first on your list. I don't even really know where to start with that statement, except to say that if you were to ask me give me a list of a couple of things that the United Nations actively is pursuing. One of the first things I would say is, global poverty. Literally the opposite of what they say their first thing. We're gonna make sure there's no poverty. No, they're going to make sure that there's endless poverty. So the whole list is just like an inversion. So number two, zero hunger. Again, I ask you, if the goal is zero hunger, why do you need $6 trillion a year to make that happen? What? Why? You could wipe that out with $100 billion. If you wanted to. I mean, if you were getting serious about this, you said, listen, my whole thing is, I just want to make sure people aren't starving to death. They may need medical attention. They may need a job. They may need all those things. That's not going to be what I'm doing. I'm just going to make sure they don't starve to death. I've got all the money in the world, and that's my goal. You could do it. You don't need $6 trillion a year to make that happen. But let me tell you who's not going to do that. The United Nations. They're not doing that. This is the antithesis of what they do. They go around creating poverty. They go around creating hunger. Third on the list, good health and well-being. Again, just invert it. They just destroy your health. That their whole goal is to destroy your health. So everything they say they're going to do, they're going to do the exact opposite. So if you haven't already noticed the theme. Number four, quality education. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Exhibit A, Common Core. I rest my case. The end. Nobody is looking for quality education with Common Core. Stop. If you think that is a thing, you don't understand Common Core. Number five. 17. Okay, so, but let me back up for a second. If you were actually going to do these things, which we know the United Nations is not going to, they're not actually going to do all the good things. But if you were, I wouldn't have a problem with ranking it like this. Poverty, number one, hunger, number two. I'd probably flip-flop those two, although they're sort of intertwined. But poverty, hunger, good health, and quality education as the first four things. Can we agree that those are pretty important? I think so. I mean, they're lying about their intentions to fix those things, but those are four things that are important. Would you like to know what number five is on the list? Gender equality. Gotta make everybody equal, even though they're not. You know, I look at those troubling pictures in Sana, Yemen, capital of Yemen, bombed to death by those savage maniacs in Saudi Arabia with weapons bought by the United States. Poverty, hunger, poor health, poor education. You know what I wish? I wish, you know what would really fix their problem is if they all had gender equality. I bet those people in Yemen are just thinking, why won't somebody step in and give us what we really need, which is gender equality? I've got to have that woman be exactly like that man. I just have to. It's a priority. Obviously, all of that is in sarcasm font. It's just, it's so frustrating that I'm sorry. Number six, clean water and sanitation. Yeah, reasonable. The United Nations, one of their 17 goals is clean water and sanitation, as it should be. Will the people get clean water? No, they will not. Will they get sanitation? I don't know. Maybe after they're done cleaning up the area that's just been bombed by where the UN peacekeepers come in and start shooting everybody up, will there be clean water and sanitation there? Perhaps. Number seven, affordable and clean energy. That's on their sustainable development goals. Hell, I'll take affordable energy at this point, which we could have if we lived in a world that wasn't run by by psychopaths. We could have that. Number eight, decent work and economic growth. Again, I love how they call it decent work. Good. Should we put good work in here? They're like, don't get carried away. This guy's going to be working in a sweatshop for 17 hours a day. We're not going to call it good work. Decent work? Decent work is a stretch. Let's call it decent work. We'll probably be able to get away with it. But I'm certainly not going to be able to call it good work. So they want for you decent work and economic growth. Why does the economy always have to be growing? Why can't it just be the economy? Always has to be in growth mode, right? Can't just have it be working. It has to be maximized. It has to be growing. How fast is it growing? Oh, it's not growing fast enough. Oh, is it growing this quarter? Oh, it didn't grow enough this quarter. We're going to have to take you're not going to get any more stock options because it wasn't growing fast. How about just functional economy? Economic functionality. How about that? I'll take that. Be a hell of a start. Number 9 on the list of 17 of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals: industry, innovation, and infrastructure. All right, well, we're getting that in the United States. We're getting Joe Biden's Build Back Better $1.5 trillion infrastructure boondoggle with roads to nowhere, and I guarantee you more potholes in your future. Industry, innovation, and infrastructure? Whatever. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, innovation, sure. But that's a company's decision to innovate. You know, if they make a better widget or make it faster or cheaper, one that, you know, more people are interested in, then they'll succeed and the other companies won't. But I don't know why the United Nations needs to get involved in innovation, because, well, they're the United Nations. Whenever they get involved, things get worse. Number 10. Reduce inequalities. Again, they're so fucking focused with inequality. Look, I'm all for equal opportunities, but it's unrealistic to think that you're going to have equal outcomes. Not everybody's the same, but not as according to the United Nations. Everybody is. We've got to reduce inequalities. We've got to reduce inequalities. Yeah, yeah. When I think of fairness and equity, I often think of the United Nations, right? With their track record of being the worst organization on the planet. I mean, the United Nations is so bad that Monsanto's like, please don't come anywhere near us. You know, we're trying to work on our image. Number 11, sustainable cities. You'll live in a micro apartment and eat bugs. Number 12, responsible consumption and production. Who defines responsible? Is my consumption of water every day irresponsible? Who's going to tell me that it is and isn't? Well, the United Nations is. And let me guess. I'm a guess. They probably are going to say that my consumption of news, my consumption of food, my consumption of everything doesn't align with where they think I should be. I mean, if they're coming from a place of you'll eat the bugs, pretty good chance that responsible consumption is going to be sort of like a, a joke, frankly. No, their idea of whoever defines responsible, that'd be a hell of a job for them, right? Because things always change. Number 13, climate action. What does that even mean? What does that mean? What does climate action mean? We're really important in climate action. Like dimming the sun, that sort of climate action? What the fuck are we talking about here? Well, no, we're talking about sea level rise and cow farts and things like that. Okay, number 14. Now it starts to get weird, as if it wasn't already. But number 14 on their list of 17 sustainability goals is life below water. Life below water. Okay. Number 15, life on land. Okay, I get the life on land part. I'm pretty comfortable with life on land. Not sure about the life below water. I think what it means is that these people want to take control of the oceans. I'm almost positive. They want to take all the fish. They probably want to, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell in her Terra Mar Foundation, they were working with preserving the oceans. Yeah, I know that UNESCO has their World Heritage Sites to talk about protecting components of, you know, regions of islands and things like that. Yeah, so they're involved. They're going to be involved in life below the water and life on land. Number 16 on their list. Their goals are peace, justice, and strong institutions. Lot of gray area there, right? Justice or just us? Because it can be both. Strong institutions. Define strong institutions, United Nations. You know, well, strong institutions like the private prisons that we're going to be putting you in. Oh, gotcha. And the last thing on the list is partnerships for the goals, which means that the United Nations really wants to work with other companies that can help them, other globalist companies out there that can help them achieve their goals of controlling the world. So they're going to be looking for partners out there. If you'd like to partner up with the United Nations on this, you can go, you can go to hell, I guess, but you can go check their website. I'm sure they're looking for volunteers to help with their new world order. I'll leave it with this. I'll leave it with a quote for you. This is from Albert Camus. He says, "The welfare of humanity is always the alibi of tyrants." I think he's right. They're looking to remake the world under the guise of climate change. They're going to save humanity. That's their alibi. It's what they do. But don't fall for it. We won't. You'll be talking to your friends. You'll be talking to your family. You'll be telling them what this is. When you start seeing ESG scores, you'll be like, oh, I know what this is. This is a giant scam. And everyone will say, there you go again with your conspiracy theories. And you'll be like, no, 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 really. Let's talk this out. And then you can maybe share this episode with them. Now's the perfect time. If you're interested, share it with your friends and family. Nobody's going to. The algorithms hate us. That's been established. My YouTube channel grows at like 3 new subscribers a week, which is amazing. Thank you, all 3 of you. Couldn't do it without you. Fuckers at YouTube. The website, The Octopus of Global Control. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. You can, we've got a cool merch store too. Oh my God, I forgot about that. Go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Check out the merchandise store if you are looking for Christmas presents, stickers. You're looking to trigger somebody in your office. I got all that stuff. So take a look, see if there's anything that's right for you, and I will talk to you later.